And I think that is, to me, the difference.
You know, there can never be democracy unless democracy is defined by accountability and justice.
Yes.
To what
Agree.
extent,
100%.
for example, should former President Donald J. Trump, to what extent should he in fact be made to be accountable to the American people, given that when he was impeached by the House of Representatives, the Senate failed by 10 votes to convict him.
The fact that he was not convicted is going to protect him from actually facing accountability as other people would. And I really hope that there's going to be a mechanism that pushes for him to be held accountable and his supporters that invaded Congress, because anytime you do not reward bad behavior. If you reward bad behavior with basically letting them get away with it without any accountability, then it's bound to repeat. And that's why Pauline's question is very, very relevant in for how long. Unless there is accountability, unless any kind of bad behavior that is tolerated, that's what people will do. People will do what they can get away with. And so Trump will do what he can get away with. He's still eligible to run again. And I just think it's bad for the country. It's similar to what's happened historically with police violence towards black people, where they just get away with it. Every time somebody gets away with it, the next person thinks they can get away with it. That's here in America, and it's around the world, where people who use violence and get away with it and have impunity or immunity will continue to do that. And so my hope is that there will be a mechanism that holds him accountable to the full extent of any person that incites violence like that. What happens to them? What is the punishment? What is the legal punishment for a person that does that? And that's how former President Donald Trump should be treated.
And there is a mechanism, which is the judiciary system in this country. And I'm really glad to see Georgia, New York, DC taking steps to investigate and try to hold not only the insurrectors accountable, but the inciters to violence. This judiciary system is supposed to hold anybody. There is nobody who is above the law in this country, So even the former president has to face the judiciary system in this country, answer for his own actions. The actions of especially picking up the phone and calling officials in states like Georgia, telling them to overturn the election behalf, calling members of Congress when they are being attacked to tell them not to ratify elections. There ought to be a law in this country that decides that no, any individual, whether president or a regular citizen, who tries to attack the election system using violence or coercion has to be held accountable. And that's what we lack in some of our countries, where a lot of political leaders, they will commit violence, including murder, to stay in power. And unfortunately, our judiciary systems are not independent of the political system in the country. So whoever controls the political system also controls the judiciary system, and therefore nobody to hold you accountable. I have hope in this country that the judiciary system, and especially it is organized so that the state attorney generals, the state judiciary system are independent from the federal judiciary system, I think there is hope that he will be held accountable, and anybody else who lied about elections. Look at the companies like Dominion that manufactured the election machines, you know, are already taking them to court for lying about their machines or lying about them trying to rig the elections for Joe Biden. So the election, the judiciary system here, I think will do its job. And for all of our sake, I hope it does its job.
I think that the trick here really is that the reason the system works here is that you have three co-equal branches of government. And each of them, whether you are talking about the legislature, which is made up of Congress, the House of Representatives, and the Senate, whether you are talking about the judiciary, the Supreme Court of the land, for example, and of course the executive, which is headed by the president, they basically function in a manner that allows them to practice a sort of checks and balances. And I think that despite the fact that a lot of judges had in fact been appointed by President Trump himself, when he sent some of his allegations to them, they were able to fiercely guard their independence and basically called it like it was, using the facts and the law, by throwing a lot of the allegations out. To what extent would you, for example, say that there is a need, when you look across the African continent, that there is a need in many African countries for, in fact, borrowing at least from that template of the United States aspect of democracy into their governance system?
I think it's highly needed, highly, highly needed, to where today in many countries, if we can just look at the belt of Africa, starting from the Horn of Africa and go all the way across to Gabon, down to Angola, and all the way back across to Tanzania. There's probably like 15 countries in that area. So many of those countries are struggling because institutions are not strong enough to have the checks and balances. You know, you look at places like Sudan, South Sudan, Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, Gabon, you know, the Congo Republic, the Central African Republic. I mean, and I can go on. And basically, power is in the hands of the president. The president controls everything. I spoke about Uganda a little bit earlier, where Museveni, who's been in power for 35 years now, he changed the constitution so he could change the age limit and make himself eligible to run. And then he ran an election where the military was basically controlling the people and held up and held his main opponent in under house arrest. And for me, things like that, and you were seeing things like that happen, by the way, even in Rwanda, where you can't say anything about the president. And whatever he decides, if he says that you're going to be convicted, by the way, there's a lady who's been arrested for speaking out and calling out the injustices in Rwanda. Her name is Ida Mange, just this Monday. Anytime you speak out against him and he decides that you're going to spend the time in prison, you're going to spend time in prison. He said it about Diane Rwigara, who ran against him in 2017, a woman who ran against him in 2017, Victoire Ingabire in 2010, Kizito Mihigo, who actually was declared dead a year ago today in a prison cell in Rwanda for basically calling out crimes that the government committed. He also called him out and said, I'm not a singer that praises the opposition, and he called for him to be imprisoned. And then he turns around and pardons them. That's controlling the institutions. you know, this is a judiciary, if there's a judiciary issue, it should be a judiciary issue. The president should have nothing to do with it. Congress should not have nothing to do with it, or parliament in the case of countries like Uganda and Rwanda, I'm using those examples. Those should be independent, but they are not independent, and we need that. We highly need that. In spite of my skepticism of what the judiciary would do with Trump, given the history in America of the judiciary siding with white supremacy, and so many recent examples of, again, I like to refer to when police kill black people, what happens? However, in Africa, in especially the belt, that's what I call it, there is a high need for institutions that come even near as close to the institutions that there are in America in terms of independence.
I'm afraid that when you use the examples like Uganda and Rwanda, you may run into a very, very strong resistance, because those two particular individuals that you have mentioned say that, in fact, they are staying longer at the political harem of their countries precisely because their people want them to do that. In fact, they say that they and their families are sacrificing for the countries, that they wouldn't even want to be there 1 minute longer, except that they are succumbing to the pressure from their people, because their people apparently cannot quite do really without their stewards, you know, without them.
That's unacceptable, because in most cases, they are doing everything possible to suppress the opposition in those countries. So if the people want to stay in power, why don't they allow the opposition also to campaign and run for office equally, and then also have just and fair elections, and let the people decide? They don't allow that. They actually jail or, you know, prevent house arrest for the opposition before the elections and even during the elections, so that they are the only one who is going to win those elections. So I don't think they are staying there for the people. They are staying there for power, and who are electing them, because when people in their country start protesting, they use violence to stop them from protesting against them. If they really believe people love them, then why don't you let who are protesting protest, and then go to the, let the polls decide who is the right leader of that particular country.
Pauline, how do you reconcile your criticism with the fact that in the case of the Rwandan ruler, some might suggest, last time when they conducted a referendum, the man virtually got something close to a perfect score? Almost 100%.
Was it a just referendum? Were people free to vote? Did they feel intimidated? Did they know that they, no matter how they vote, whether to have continue or not to continue, there would be no repercussions. You know, the experiences of people in a country like Rwanda or other countries in Africa know that if you vote against the ruling party, against the ruling president, you're in for it, and you will pay with your blood, you know. And so people vote, you know, sometimes even let him continue. If that's gonna help us stay, you know, alive, let him continue. So I question the referendums that happen, and I question some of the practices, like in the country of Kenya, where, you know, if a president is angry with politicians who have opposed him, You know, he goes to Congress, kick them out. You know, they kick them out from the ruling party because they question, for example, the BBI. That is in Kenya. You know, when they have the referendum on BBI in Kenya, you know, but look at the intimidation that is taking place now. You have to count on human beings fear for their lives. Human beings fear for their generations to come. So they are not going to do anything that will jump at. Sometimes, yes, they gain, and they fight. I mean, they protests and they push back. But most of the times, people will stand back because they know the repercussions will be negative.
I think that there are some exceptions which we could probably note, especially with regards to the judiciary system. We know, for example, that during the last election, you had the Kenyan Supreme Court stand up.
Yes.
I think that was some progress. In the last election in Malawi, you had the Supreme Court stand up. And Malawi, better than Kenya, the rerun actually was conducted in such a way that it provided essentially what you would call justified competition, a competition that resulted, in fact, in turning tables. The opposition ended up, in fact, winning the presidency. So I think it could happen. Unfortunately, yes. In most of other countries across the continent, yes, you do have checks and balances reflected on paper. But when it comes to the reality of real politics, you have the executive led by a president who basically functions as if he is the Superman, in the sense that the national assemblies, the judiciary systems, merely become his subsidiaries.
That's
how
right.
Could that possibly be changed? Gatibu.
And I think that for that to change, it's going to take resistance. It's going to take people really taking a stand and pushing, because these dictators are not going to change on their own. They're not going to change what they do. It's going to take a global effort, internal and external. The issues that we have in a lot of the African countries are both internal in terms of the dictatorship and the power that they have, but also the external support that they get a lot of times from Western countries. And so they have all this power. They use it against the people. In cases, when Pauline was speaking, I just thought about the elections in Liberia in years ago when Charles Taylor was running, and people were saying, he killed my mom, he killed my pa, but I will vote for him anyway. That's what happens in countries like Uganda and Rwanda, especially, where almost virtually everybody's had somebody killed by the regime, and so they're afraid that they will be killed. But I was very excited and actually happy to see the result in Malawi. I was very nervous for it, seeing the violence during the election violence, but the turn of events was great. But Malawi has been making progressive changes toward a democratic and an accountable system. And I think it also is gonna take not only internal people taking a stance, but the regions themselves taking a stance, and the whole continent, you know, taking a stand, and the globe taking a stance toward these people. Because I think the South African influence in the region that Malawi is in, Southern Africa, is it is the most democratic part or region of Africa, of all the regions on the continent. And I think that has a lot of influence.
You know, Pauline, there used to be a time when military coups were in vogue in Africa. And indeed, across the developing world. But it reached a point where the international community essentially drew a line in the sand. and said, if you seize power by means of AK-47, tanks, and you know it, and whatever it is, we are not going to do business with you as usual. Any particular reason, for example, why the international community does not use that same policy about, for example, elections that really are not elections, but they are selections of an incumbent president who essentially controls everything you can think about. If that particular individual steals an election, rigs an election, or changes constitutions, and there is evidence to the contrary, why can't, for example, the international community adopt that policy that we are not going to do business with you as usual, because stealing an election is tantamount to treason, precisely because, in fact, it is stealing a country.
The self-interest of the United States, for example, or European Union, or any other country in the world, actually determines whether they will hold a particular leader accountable to his misdeeds. Because they say that it is better to have that particular in place to protect their rather than, you know, having that person because they stole the elections. So I think what we as an organization, as Advocacy Network for Africa, American Friends Service, that we push that the self-interest of a particular country has to put into consideration the well-being of the citizens of that particular country. Because if they don't, they are using their own self-interest to continue suppressing, you know, people around the world, including some of the African countries, you know, where they could add democracy if American or European countries were not involved, you know, or they actually those leaders accountable. But it is not happening. They keep propping those leaders by giving them financial aid and actually by pushing back on the opposition when the opposition in those countries stand up and say, we need to make a difference in our country. Ask for the United States, for example, not to support leaders who have stolen elections, who are using violence to suppress their own. Like, you know, that he takes money either from the U.S. or any other and use it for their self-interest, you know, by military capability to suppress its own people. We call on them to stop doing that.
Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, time is not our best ally. And for that, I have to frankly say again that I was profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have had the opportunity to host the two of you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you so much, Shaka. It was a great pleasure.
Thanks to our audience for joining our conversation on Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please, please, let's keep the African hopes alive.